So we're, it's January, what, 6th, 2010, here in Dubai, ladies meeting. So we thought today we'd talk about emotions. This is a very important topic for Vaishnavas, personalist Vaishnavas, because the impersonalists are trying to stop emotions, and we're trying to do something very different. We're trying to spiritualize emotions. But often in this world, we find our emotions cause us problems, isn't it? Yes. Did you turn on the AC?
Yeah.
AC is not, I don't have AC. If that's okay, no AC. Sometimes we have to deal with things like anger, frustration, isn't it? It seems that in this life we spend a lot of time and energy trying to control our emotions, or trying to stop our emotions. So I'm sure you've all heard of the very famous philosopher Descartes, who is trying to think of what is the most essential principle of existence. Is there anything that's a foundational truth? And he decided that his own existence, the fact that he exists, was his foundational truth. And he said, I think, therefore I am. You've all heard this? I think, therefore I am. That because he was able to think, he knew he must exist. And he decided all other truths would come from that. But really, according to our Vaishnava philosophy, the essential principle of existence is not thinking, but feeling. We can think of many life forms that do not do much thinking. It's not. I'm fine without the mic. I'm in anxiety that you're stressing so much. It's not important. It's a small group and they're sitting close. So just be peaceful.
Right, 1 minute.
But if you could turn off the AC, I would be very grateful.
It's on.
No, off.
She wants
please.
It off. Okay. Only fan should be
just
off.
Just fan, please. Is that okay? I wouldn't mind, but when it's so much trouble, then just...
These technical...
Yeah. If you could do it in 1 minute with peace, yeah. I would take it. But if it's going to be 10, 15 minutes with anxiety, then...
Yeah, I mean...
That's not worth it. So the very small creatures like the amoebas or some of the plants, we can't say that they do a lot of thinking. But, you know, they all feel. There's all sorts of experiments that even the plants have feelings. And even some little tiny insect has feelings. It has desires. And really, the essential principle of life is to have desires. That's how you know you're alive. Just like this chair has no desire. I'm having to put my foot on the chair. And the chair doesn't either like it or not like it. Are we going to get this to work now? And now it is working. Oh, very good. Then we can open the door?
Yeah. And then we can open the door.
Very good. Looks scary. Why don't we? Can we turn it somehow? Sort of down so it doesn't block.
Yeah.
All right, well, will that work? Can you hear me with that? Is it on?
Yeah.
Sort of. It's sort of on.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll manage. Can you hear me in the back? Can you hear me? In the back? Hold on. If we think about the difference between a living object and a... That's a weird sound. The sound is distorted. Between a living being and a dead object... Well, I'll ask you, what's the difference? What's the difference between something alive and this?
One has feelings, one does not have. One has soul, one does not have.
Life, emotion.
consciousness. Okay. But like I can do this. If I did this with you, what would you say?
You would feel scared.
Scared. You'd say, please stop. You'd say no. So this cannot say no. A living being can say no. This doesn't care if I'm throwing it, if I'm hitting it, if I break it, doesn't care. Has no desires. No desires. So Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing. Yep, this sound is still distorted. It's actually quite strange.
It was better without the mic.
Yeah.
Original, so
this
we
is,
can hear your voice.
This is making it very distorted.
Okay,
sometimes technology that doesn't work is worse than no technology. So we have, first of all, the intelligence. The intelligence makes plans. I want to be happy in this way. I want to be happy in that way. Then the mind says, okay, well, if this is the way you want to be happy, then we should do this and we should not do this. Like if you decide I want to go to the university and get a degree, then your mind says, okay, now you can't go to the party and now you have to study. Isn't it? Accepting and rejecting according to the plans of the intelligence. Then the body actually carries out the plans of the mind and the intelligence. If things work nicely. If things work nicely. Sometimes the body is driving the whole system. Like with an animal, they smell something, and then, okay, now the mind then follows the senses. The mind says to the nose, does this smell good? Nose says yes. Mind says, then I accept. And intelligence says, yes, yes, mind, whatever you want to do. And many times even humans act like this. But ideally, it should be the intelligence sets a goal. This is what I want to achieve. And then the mind accepts or rejects things according to that goal. And the senses follow the mind. That is ideal. And who is the one desiring in the first place? The intelligence is sort of like if you get together and you have a vision. We were talking last night about training the children. And you have to start with some vision. Why are we training the children? What are we trying to achieve? What do we want the children to be able to know and do and think and when we're finished training them? What's our purpose? So who is the one who is desiring? That is the soul. That's us. The desires, the emotions, they're coming from the soul. And it's all a very integrated system. If you change your behavior, it will affect your thoughts and feelings. If you change your thoughts, it will affect your feelings and behavior. And if you change your feelings, it will affect your thoughts and behavior. You think of it like three interlocking gears. Whichever one you change, it affects the other ones. So, what is the difference between material and spiritual feelings? What makes an emotion material or spiritual? Anybody give me some idea? What makes an emotion material?
If it is related to body, then it is.
Okay, so if it's related to body, some others?
Something we desire in material sense to satisfy ourselves.
Okay, again, related to the body, something that I'm desiring to make the body happy. Or mind?
What makes it material is my happiness. What makes it spiritual is Krishna's happiness.
Okay, so what makes it material is I'm at the center rather than Krishna. Other ideas? What makes it material?
When we want to make others happy through our feelings, that's also material.
If we want to make others happy, but really we're looking to make ourselves happy through others.
Well,
that's also material. That's a little bit better material. Just like we were talking about fellowship with devotees, it's very pleasurable to receive gifts, but it's also very pleasurable to give gifts.
Yes.
So everywhere I'm going here in the Middle East, everybody wants to give me food. It's very pleasurable to eat, but sometimes it's more pleasurable to feed somebody else. At least it's equally pleasurable. Of course, you cannot starve. You cannot simply starve and only feed other people. But it is certainly very pleasurable to feed others. However, that can be a kind of extended pleasing the self. Just like I had an experience where, and I'm sure you've all had seen similar things, so I went to a devotee's house for lunch, and there were maybe 30 people there. And they had given me so many preparations, I thought it was Govardhan Puja. So even you take one spoon of each preparation, and then you don't need to eat for another 4 days, right? So I had already had full plate of prasadam, and I had already washed my hands, and then someone runs in and says, oh, somebody's brought, can you move up a little bit? I don't have a mic, and I have the capability of projecting my voice, but it's good if you could move up. In fact, why don't all of you move up a little bit? I don't bite in this. That would be nice. Please, nobody sit very far away. I like fresh air, and I don't want to strain my voice. Thank you. Thank you. Now we're good friends, right? Okay. So at the end, somebody brought in two more preparations, and they said, Urmila, we want you to eat these. Now, why did they want me to eat those preparations? For me?
Because they had cooked.
Yes. Because they had cooked it, and they wanted the satisfaction that I'd say, oh, this is very expertly cooked. They wanted me to say, oh, you spent so long in the kitchen. You very carefully picked out the vegetables. You were carefully spicing it. They wanted appreciation, which is not bad. Wanting appreciation is not a bad thing. But my point is that, really, they were not serving me. They were serving themselves. So, even when we give to others, as long as we are conditioned souls, actually we are serving ourselves. I mean, that's a very clear example. I'd already washed my hands. I was already finished, and I was completely full. I said, no, I don't want to eat anymore. If I eat anymore, I will actually feel bad. Oh, please eat.
Did you eat?
No. I was already up from the seat even. If I had been sitting down, I probably would have eaten, but I was already up. But we can, if we're honest, we can understand that even the things we do for others are very often, really, we're doing it for ourselves. Although that's better. That is better. And Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that best to love me, and if you can't do that, then you do sadhana bhakti, abhyas yoga. If you cannot even do that, you do some work for me. And if you cannot do that, give in charity, sacrifice. Give up some of your possessions. Give up some of your wealth. Give up some of your time. Do some kind of sacrifice. So to give to others is a very good thing. We don't want to stop people from giving to others. But as long as it stays in the material sphere, as long as I'm still the center of that giving, then that is also material emotions. The happiness I feel when someone eats my food is still material emotions. And what else makes something a material emotion?
When it is attached to a non-living thing?
To a non-living thing? Depends on what I want to use the non-living thing for.
Yeah. When I want to possess wealth.
When
house,
I want to possess, right? And material emotions also are controlled by the modes of nature. They're often controlled by body chemistry. So in female bodies, we hate to say this, but in female bodies, our emotions are much more controlled by our body chemistry than someone who's in a male body. As the chemicals in our bodies change, isn't it a fact? It's embarrassing. So nobody wants, you're all sitting there, you don't want to admit it, but you know, it's the truth. As the chemicals in our bodies change, it affects our emotions. That's true for men also, of course. Everybody is more grouchy and irritable when they are tired or when they are hungry. Everybody. You know, and men also have their emotions affected by their body chemicals, but women especially so. There are certain times when things seem very terrible, and then 3 days later, they're not so terrible. Same thing. Same thing. Or I had about, how many years ago? 17 years ago. I lost a child. And I had all these emotions. I had all these mother emotions, and I didn't have anything, any place to put them. My youngest child was 10, so I couldn't just put him on my lap. And so I was grieving. But I could understand that a lot of my grief was just chemical. Does that make sense to you? During pregnancy, there's these different chemicals going in the body to prepare you for being a mother. And then if there's no baby, if the baby dies, you have all these feelings. And you've nothing, there's no place for them. So I found it a very interesting experience. And what was especially interesting was that I couldn't stop the emotions. I could observe them, and I could say, oh, this is very interesting. But they still happened. So these are material emotions. They're coming just from the different chemicals in the body. And sometimes we feel sad, sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're frustrated, sometimes we're confused. And it's just the modes of nature acting upon us. It's something like a movie. So the people who make a movie, their purpose is to control the emotions of the audience. That's their purpose. And if you're identifying with the character in the movie, then when the character is in danger, you're feeling fear. When the character marries the girl, you're feeling excitement. Right? So where are those emotions coming from? The emotions are coming, they're being controlled by the director. Really, it's just three colored lights on the screen. If you could see it as it is, you see just three colored lights on the screen. Why would you feel scared or excited or confused? But it's done in such a way that it affects our emotions. So material emotions are also like that. It's just goodness, passion, and ignorance is affecting our body, affecting our mind. And we're thinking, yes, I'm feeling now happy. I'm feeling now excited, now I'm feeling peaceful, now I'm scared, now I'm angry. So in one sense, it's not real. Like the emotions you feel watching a movie, in one sense, it's not real. It has nothing to do with you. So the material emotions also, they're not really coming from the soul. They're being stimulated by outside sources. And finally, I would say that material emotions come from the illusion of being separated from Krishna. When I think I'm separated from Krishna, I feel incomplete. I can say, Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachite Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vasishite. And Prabhupada says, everything is actually complete. But we don't feel that way. Prabhupada gives the example, you cut a hand off from the body. The hand is no longer complete. It can't function anymore. So we're not actually separated from Krishna. But if I think I am separated from Krishna, I feel incomplete. I feel that something is missing. Actually, nothing's missing. Isvara Sarvabhuta Namradesha Adunatistati. Krishna's in my heart. Everything is already there. But in illusion, I feel a kind of emptiness. I think of it like a kind of hunger.
You don't feel connectedness. You don't feel that connectedness.
I don't feel the connectedness. Oh, they've got more water appeared in my cup. Magic cup. I drank the water and I look and there's water in it again. You know that story of Dinabandhu? Do you know that story? You don't know that story? This is another. Well, actually, this is completely related. It's not unrelated. So there was this little boy who was very, very poor. His father had died. Mother was very, very poor. And he was going... He was going to a school. And at the school, his teacher said, pretty soon we're going to have a big festival. Everybody has to bring something for the festival. And one boy said, oh, I'll bring some cloth. Another boy said, I'll bring butter. Another boy said, I'll bring this and that. And our little boy, we'll call him Raju. So Raju didn't say anything because he knows my mother's very poor. He said, I'll ask my mother. So he goes home and he asks his mother, Mommy, what should I bring to the festival? She said, we don't have anything. I barely have enough money just to give you a little food and you a little clothes. He said, what should I do? She said, I have heard that Dinabandhu, the friend of the poor, that he will give to anyone who asks. So Raju says, oh, where can I find this Dinabandhu? She said, I'm not sure, but I've heard that sages in the forest worship Dinabandhu. And right over there, there's a forest. Between our house and the school, there's a forest. You can go there and look for Dinabandhu. So Raju goes to the forest and he calls, Dinabandhu! Dinabandhu! Oh, bye! Come help me! Nobody comes. Dinabandhu! Nobody comes. So he sits down in the forest and he cries. Dinabandhu! And then Krishna comes. He says, oh, you're crying for me. What would you like? And Raju said, I go to school and the teacher is asking us to bring something for the festival, but we're very poor. And Krishna said, you tell your teacher that you will bring some yogurt, some curd, some yogurt. And on the day of the festival, you come back to the forest and I'll supply. So Raju went to the school. He told his teacher, I'll bring yogurt. Teacher's very happy. So then the day of the festival, Raju again goes to the forest. Dinabandhu! Dinabandhu! And Krishna comes and he gives Raju a little clay cup. Little clay cup full of yogurt. And Raju's just a little boy, very small, 5-6 years old. And he doesn't know. So he's just happy. Oh, my friend Dinabandhu, he's given me some yogurt. And he takes the little cup to school. And there's a priest going to do a big jagya. Well, the teacher says, so what have you brought? I brought yogurt. I told you I'd bring yogurt. Let me see. Give it to the priest. So he gives this little cup to the priest. And the priest looks at it and says, what is this? We're having a big festival. Hundreds of people are coming. What are we going to do? This is not even enough practically for one person. And just disgust, he just puts down the cup and all the yogurt spills out. And then he picks it up and he sees again, it's full. So the priest is confused. Then he intentionally dumps it out. And again he looks, it is full. And then he dumps, and again, however many times he dumps it out, it is full. So when one is connected with Krishna, it is like that. It is exactly like that. But when we are disconnected with from Krishna, we feel empty. Like Draupadi's pot after she had eaten. And our material emotions means we are trying to fill this emptiness from the material nature. There was one very famous Christian theologian, Thomas Merton. He wrote an appreciation of Prabhupada's Gita. And he wrote, everyone has a God-shaped vacuum in their heart. You know what is a vacuum? Empty space. Yes, God-shaped vacuum. And of course, Krishna is unlimited. Advaita Machuta Manadim Anantarupam. So this hole in our heart, it's unlimited. Like, you know, when Mother Yasoda is feeding Krishna her breast milk, the milk on the stove is thinking, Krishna's belly is unlimited, and Mother Yasoda's breast milk is unlimited. So I will never get any opportunity for service. And then the milk starts thinking about Krishna's unlimited belly and in ecstasy boils over the pot. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this. So Krishna is unlimited. Therefore, this unlimited hole in our heart cannot be filled by anything limited. And material emotions means I'm trying to fill an unlimited hole with limited things. What I'm trying to do is not really bad. Looking for love is not bad. Looking even for appreciation is not bad. Looking for shelter and security is not bad. Wanting fun and excitement is not bad. But instead of looking for Krishna, I'm looking for this in material things. And my material emotions come from that. If I think I'm going to fill that hole, then I get happy and excited. If for a moment it seems a little bit full, I feel peaceful and satisfied. When despite my efforts to fill it, it's not working, I get frustrated, angry, bitter, helpless, hopeless. And often I get frustrated with the people around me because I'm thinking that they're Krishna. Especially the women, they think their husbands will be Krishna. See this? The husbands think their wife will be Krishna. This is the person who's going to satisfy all of my needs, all of my desires. This person will be my friend, my shelter. They'll always give me full understanding and respect and consideration and love and care and peace and security and fun. And but they can't. Just like I cannot do all these things for my husband. Can any of you meet all of the needs and desires of your husband? Impossible. You don't have it, isn't it? Even if you give everything, some things you don't have to give. And same other way. Or sometimes people think their children will meet all of their needs. People sometimes think their job, their career, their friends, their community, their country, for some charity, that this will meet all of my needs. And then when that doesn't work, because it cannot work, then people get frustrated. So we can say that these are material emotions, we can say, are the result of trying to meet spiritual needs in a material way. That material emotions are the result of trying to meet spiritual needs in a material way. And sometimes, when it appears we get a little satisfaction, we feel what we would call positive emotions. And when it becomes obvious that our strategy is not working, then we feel what we call negative emotions. Now, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita 2.62. Anybody know what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita 2.62? Yes, can anyone tell me what that is? Uh-huh. So what does it start with? There's a progression. Yes. Okay, but can we go, what is the steps? First is contemplation, thinking about. Next is?
Lust.
The middle one. You're at step three. Attachment. So there's contemplation, attachment, then lust. Now lust, many times we take lust to mean sexual desire, and it does mean that. But lust also means any desire that's gotten to the point that you're thinking, I must do this, and I don't care what is the price. Just like probably every 2 to 4 weeks in the news, we find some person who has sacrificed their whole life for the sake of sexual lust. Isn't it a fact? If you read do any of you read the headlines in the news? You don't know what goes on in the news? Some big politician, some sports hero, some movie star, some personality. They may be very rich, very famous, very beautiful or handsome, very well respected, and for the sake of sex desire, they throw everything away. Is this true or not? Yes, he's a good example. But, you know, he's just one of so many examples. But he's a very good example because just see what he had. He had so much money, still has, so much money. How many people, you know, in 10 lifetimes will have that much money? Yes, Bill Clinton is another good example. So much money, so much respect. Tiger Woods had a lot of respect. People really respected him. Beautiful wife. Beautiful. Supermodel wife, nice children, beautiful homes, whole world respecting him, practically speaking. And so talented. And just for sex desire. So that's lust. Bill Clinton, another example. So he was president of the United States, the most powerful country in the world, at least right now. In the past, other countries were more powerful. In the future, other countries will be more powerful anyway. So you're the head of the most powerful country in the world. Also very wealthy, very intelligent. Bill Clinton's a very intelligent man.
Yes.
Was a Rhodes Scholar. Very learned. Very respected. And for the sake of sex desire, he was willing to sacrifice everything. Just imagine. So these people are willing to sacrifice their money, their reputation, their health, their marriage. These people generally, I'm sure Tiger Woods likes his wife, likes his children. Their career, they're willing to sacrifice everything just for a little bit of sense pleasure. Just see. So that's lust. Lust means that you're thinking, I don't care what is the price.